Welcome back to Issues Etc. here in the third hour. A few more questions for Dr. John Beck. Very interesting conversation here on both the climate and also what it was like to live, where you lived, how you put up a city or a dwelling in first century Palestine. Dr. John Beck is author of our Issues Etc. book of the month for July. After this short conclusion to our conversation, we've got audio open lines, and then we'll be talking about the St. Louis Post-Dispatch piece that appeared yesterday, Churches Joining Stem Cell Showdown. And Dr. Richard Cole will join us from Washington University to respond to some of the things in that newspaper story. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Dr. Beck, you were talking before about, in general terms, about what it was like where you put up a city and what different settlement factors went into where people lived in first century Palestine. We hear so much about, you know, Jesus being in the house or going to someone's house. And I guess I always picture kind of the Sunday school story picture of a house, you know, very simple, kind of almost a mud hut affair there. What was the typical house there, and why was it constructed in the way it was?
Well, in the first century, Todd, people tended to build their dwellings out of what was locally available. I mean, unless you were someone like King Herod, who could afford to have huge, massive blocks cut, or could afford to have wood imported, those were not options for you. So what we find people constructing homes out of is field stone, by and large, where field stone was available. So in places like the area around Bethlehem, for example, you're going to find people taking advantage maybe of a naturally forming cave. They're going to build a field stone superstructure over the top of that, which is going to be a one- or two-room building for them to be able to sleep in and shelter in case there was a problem. Their animals would be included in the basement, in the cave. And by the way, not to get stray too far from your question, but I think it's an interesting observation that it's a good example of how often we sometimes superimpose our values on Scripture. When it speaks about Jesus' birth occurring in an animal shelter, almost all of us move quickly to a wooden barn like the kind my grandfather had or something like that. It's pretty clear in my mind that people did not build animal shelters out of wood barn out of wood. Jesus likely was born in a cave like setting where the animals would have been kept. And interestingly, the Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem is built over just such a cave. So it was often done in that way. If you live farther south where you didn't have the field stones, you're going to build a one- or two-, three-room structure out of mud brick that you're going to make. You're going to plaster over that every year to try to prevent it from degrading during the rainy season. If you live farther north and you're where Jesus is headquartered in Capernaum, now you're going to shift to a different type of stone. This is the basalt black type of stone that was found naturally in the area. And you're not going to have naturally forming caves, so you're going to actually build a series of narrow rooms around a central courtyard where your animal is going to be kept. So even in the life of and ministry of Jesus, depending on where he is in the country, we may want to picture a different type of residence.
So we hear about the famous home in Jerusalem with the upper room where Jesus eats the last Passover with his family.
Mm-hmm.
And that story account is just full of all sorts of geography, like a man carrying a water jar in his head and the animals and everything else.
Well, I do appreciate the fact that your sensitivity to geography has increased.
Oh, it is increasing quite a bit, having looked over your book. But there they are in this upper room. What are we to picture here? I mean, is it this big, expansive thing of Da Vinci's painting, or what are we looking at?
Well, that also probably has lots of overtones from Europe, just like the animal shelter does. We're probably talking about a room in an area of the community that is a little bit wealthier. They're building in the upper portion of Jerusalem, where you might have some more of that natural air conditioning coming in. The exact dimensions of the room we wouldn't know for sure, but it's certainly not as spacious as some of the rooms we see pictured in the European art.
Dr. John Beck is a guide for Biblical World Seminars. He spent this month with us in conversation. He's author of our Issues Etc. book of the month for July, The Land of Milk and Honey, An Introduction to the Geography of Israel. For more information on this book, you can still go to our website issuesetc.org and find the book on our homepage. Or you can always call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, and ask for The Land of Milk and Honey, Our Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for July. Dr. John Beck, thank you very much for being our guest. It's been a pleasure spending this month in conversation with you.
I've enjoyed it too, Todd. I really have a passion for helping people get into their Bibles in new and interesting ways, and I hope this is a book at least serves as something of a gateway for your listeners too.
I think it certainly has. Thanks for being our guest.
My pleasure.
Well, we've got audio open lines here for the next 20 minutes or so. The biggest story, of course, has to do, and this is a story, a sad story, actually. You may have heard at the top of the hour in the news that Mel Gibson, famous for many things, has checked himself into rehab. If you haven't been paying attention, it's been hard to miss this one. Mel Gibson got himself in trouble with the law this weekend, beginning, I think, late Friday night. Here's the story from NBC News.
First, a major Hollywood star under fire today. Mel Gibson was caught driving too fast early Friday morning, but that was only the start of his troubles. Here's NBC's Jennifer London.
It was on this windy stretch of Malibu's Pacific Coast Highway that Academy Award-winning actor Mel Gibson was stopped for speeding, going 87 in a 45-mile-per-hour zone. Then he was arrested for suspicion of drunk driving. The story might have ended there, but according to celebrity website TMZ, Gibson was belligerent during the arrest, tried to escape, and launched into a tirade of anti-Semitic slurs, at one point reportedly saying, "The Jews are responsible for all the wars in the world." Over the weekend, calling his behavior despicable, Gibson, who admits he's had a long battle with alcoholism, released a statement which read, "I am deeply ashamed of everything I said, and I apologize to anyone who I have offended." Gibson's been accused of anti-Semitism before. His hit movie, The Passion of the Christ, was strongly criticized.
I think that Mr. Gibson has two diseases. One is alcoholism and one is anti-Semitism. And, you know, when people become drunk, unfortunately, they tell the truth too often.
Then there's Mel Gibson's father, who has said he believed the Holocaust was, quote, mostly fiction.
There's yet another twist to this story. TMZ also claims the sheriff's department doctored the arrest report by removing Gibson's offensive language, reportedly because of its inflammatory nature, a claim the sheriff's department denies.
Our investigation will be complete and will contain all evidence of fact. There is going to be no sanitization.
But Hollywood insider Harvey Levin, who runs TMZ.com, says the sheriff's department initially said Gibson was arrested without incident.
It's not about the media getting lied to. It's what are they doing? What are they thinking when they are basically trying to doctor a police report? Who are they protecting and why?
That's a question for the sheriff's department. As for Gibson's career, the public will have to decide if they accept his apology. For today, Jennifer London, NBC News, Hollywood.
Well, to be honest, Mel Gibson's career probably ended with the making of that movie, The Passion of the Christ. He was very openly and publicly professed as a Christian, as a Roman Catholic. And so his career is in Hollywood, who knows? I mean, everybody has a comeback. But when he made that movie, in many ways, in a very silent and kind of polite way afterwards, he becomes persona non grata. Having made some rather interesting movies, I actually think my favorite one of his movies is not The Passion of the Christ, although he did a great job there, did not act in it anyway, but Signs. M. Night Shyamalan. It was a great movie, and Mel Gibson did a great job acting in it. Now, it's a sad story, but your react to this, the arrest of Mel Gibson, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Happy to take your phone calls here during audio open lines. Of course, that story pulling out all the stops, not only talking about is he anti-Semitic, did he make anti-Semitic comments when he was arrested, that has yet to be seen. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. He has apologized. We don't know. He didn't specify what he was apologizing for, but he has apologized publicly. And then they had to toss in this, and then there's his father. Look, I don't want to be, my dad is a great guy. Maybe some dirt might come out on my father in the future that I don't know about. I don't want to be held accountable for what my father says or does, even though, as far as I know, I wouldn't have any reason to be ashamed of it. But this is the cost, perhaps, of celebrity as well. Our call-in numbers, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, and our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. Some Christians are looking at what's going on in the Middle East, in particular Israel, Hezbollah, and Lebanon, and they believe, they really believe that the world is coming to an end. Here's a story from CNN.
They say the end of the world is coming.
As far as I can tell, we are at the very end, and we need to prepare ourselves for that according to the Word of God.
The Israeli-Hezbollah conflict, they say, is a sign that the Bible's final chapter, the book of Revelation, is unfolding before our eyes. One of the Bible's most widely debated books, Revelation is filled with vivid and frightening imagery. Satan, the four horsemen of the apocalypse, the mark of the beast. It all depicts a great world apocalyptic battle for Israel, Armageddon, that ushers in the return of Jesus Christ and the beginning of a thousand-year period of peace.
The sixth angel sounded, and I heard a voice from the four horns.
At this Pentecostal church in Dallas, Pastor Craig Treadwell tells his congregation that their salvation is tied to events happening 6,000 miles away.
Are we in World War III right now? It certainly looks like we are.
Events, he says, that were predicted 2,000 years ago.
The Bible prophesies that 2 billion people will die. There is a massive nuclear holocaust just ahead.
Scary stuff coming from a popular local pastor, but he is not alone. Well-known Reverend Jerry Falwell updated his Falwell Confidential column last week to say, "It is apparent, in light of the rebirth of the State of Israel, that the present-day events in the Holy Land may very well serve as a prelude or forerunner to the future Battle of Armageddon and the glorious return of Jesus Christ." In recent times, some Christians have looked for signs that the apocalypse is near. Some have even tried to carry out its prophecies. And over 62 million have bought these fictional books, the Left Behind series, describing the inevitability of the end.
Today, we will read straight from the Bible.
And at Pastor Treadwell's radio show that he co-hosts with Pastor Irvin Baxter, the talk is of end times.
You've got one-third of mankind killed.
You've got 2 billion dead. Israel will survive, but will suffer a lot. And then finally, relations between Israel and the international community will go south. The world community invades Armageddon.
Treadwell and Baxter say we are in or near the final 7 years leading up to Armageddon. They say just look to Revelation chapter 9 if you have doubts.
This war will emanate from the river Euphrates. Did you know most of the Euphrates River is in the nation of Iraq?
The pastors say there is a correlation between almost every image in the Bible and current events.
The Bible talks about tsunamis. It talks about the waves in the sea roaring. It talks about a dramatic increase in earthquakes.
There's a fiction being created here, like a Stephen King horror movie.
Reverend Kevin Bean of St. Bartholomew's Church in New York City says Revelation is not meant to be read so literally. And, he says, it is irresponsible and dangerous to misinterpret the text.
It's a part of our church. It's a part of our tradition. But we don't read it the way a lot of people do, which is to make that false correlation with present-day events. That is a crock.
According to a Harris Interactive poll of 1,000 people, 59% said they believe the events described in Revelation will occur at some point in the future. And 17% say that it will happen during their lifetime. So the question remains, how was Revelation meant to be read?
Apocalyptic is about encouraging and consoling a people that are facing calamitous and catastrophic times to say that in spite of all of this, there is a God at work in this terrible world and a God that will vindicate.
And back at North City's church in Dallas, plans are being made.
Look to the book of Revelations as indicators of what's going to happen.
For what they believe may be the end of the world as we know it. Delia Gallagher, CNN, New York.
And that really says it all. Look to the book of Revelation for indicators of what will happen. Rather than look to the book of Revelation to see what the book of Revelation itself says it's about. And you don't have to go past the first verse, the revelation of Jesus Christ. Why not read the book of Revelation to find Jesus Christ as the sum and substance of biblical prophecy? Look, I don't know when the world's going to end. I'm safer saying that than saying we're at the edge of Armageddon. No one knows the day or the hour. And one thing you can be certain of, anyone who claims to either know that day or that hour, or who says to you, well, we're on the verge of it, or I love the way they hedge their bets, it's either here or it's near. Well, golly, I could say, that's kind of like me saying maybe to my kids. My kids know exactly what maybe means. Maybe means no for now, and maybe yes in the future, but not now. Now, this is why we don't have to hedge our bets. We simply pray that he come quickly. And it says, when you see these signs occurring, quickly run to your television, turn on CNN. No, he says, look up, for your redemption is near, because your Redeemer is near. Feel free to react to anything during audio open lines, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. Up first here in audio open lines, Joe calls from his car. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Todd. A couple things. One, back when I was at Evangelical, the scariest thing in the world for me was dead air on the radio station, the Christian radio station, because I knew it was the rapture, and I was stuck listening still.
Oh!
But I have a comment and a question about the Mel Gibson thing. One, I wish Mel was a Lutheran, because this would be a golden opportunity for him to preach the law and the gospel and let the world know that he's no different or better than anybody else. And two, as a Roman Catholic, how could he, I mean, is there any way theologically that he could do that, bring out redemption in this in such a way, or how would he do that as a Roman Catholic if he were able to?
Well, that's a good question. Thank you very much. I don't know try to put yourself in Mel Gibson's shoes. You have just committed a public and notorious sin. And there's no getting around it. So politically, he's done the right thing. He simply fessed up to what he's done, and he's apologized appropriately and appropriately. He's apologized. Is he in the position to somehow say, okay, now let me, as a Christian, turn this around and, quote-unquote, spin it to make it a witness? He's probably better off leaving that in someone else's hands at this time. He's got a drinking problem, obviously. He's done the best thing he can do right now, which is try and go get some help for his drinking problem. He's got a legal problem right now, which I guess if you're a celebrity in Hollywood, those kind of things could be made to go away with a lot of money and not too much trouble. And he certainly will have to address this publicly beyond just apologizing for his what appears to be terrible behavior. And there is to kind of take something from our previous conversation earlier today, there's a time and a place for everything. And he might run the risk trying to turn this into a learning moment or a witnessing moment of not simply getting his house in order first. But I think, Joe, you're right. In the long run, he needs to come forward as anyone would. As, look, we Christians are sinners. And as much as we despise ourselves as sinners, despise the sins we commit, this is why I need Jesus Christ. That's not the kind of statement you necessarily make through a lawyer, though, when you're going into rehab. By the way, tune in tomorrow on Issues, Etc. We are going to be discussing the rapture with Pastor Brian Wolfmiller. A little follow-up on the world is ending as we know it. Joel calls from St. Louis. Hi, Joel.
Hi there. Just regarding the whole teachings of the end time stuff, from what I've been taught, the whole idea of millennialism and all that is a relatively new understanding of Revelation, like starting back in the 1850s, I think, or mid-19th century. Is that true? And can you expand on that even a little bit?
Okay, yeah. Dispensational millennialism is the newcomer to the end times theologies. Millennialism, in other forms, has been around for a long, long time in the Christian church. That is a view that says there's a literal thousand-year reign at the end of time where Christ bodily reigns in Jerusalem. That is very old. I think you can even find some church fathers who probably would have read the book of Revelation that way. But dispensational premillennialism, which holds to a whole different reading of Holy Scripture, and in addition to a literal thousand-year reign of Christ, a lot of other strange teachings about the end times, that's the newcomer. Oh, what other teachings? Like, the land of Israel is the sum and substance of biblical prophecy. The national state of Israel is the key to understanding all biblical prophecy. A secret rapture, 7-year tribulation, those kind of things. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Kathy's on the line from House Springs, Missouri. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Todd. It's been a long time. I was listening to you. The news media said it was the end of the world. They don't mean end of the world. They're talking about end of the age. However, if we would have believed in, we wouldn't have got, Jesus would have not have warned the apostles about 70 AD coming if there was not an immediate warning. And as you said, we can see the signs of the time to look up and see our redemption draw near. I do not believe in a secret coming, but I do believe that these things are taking place as a sign to the possibility of the coming of Christ and to issue in the 1,000-year millennial.
Thank you, Kathy. Yes, without a doubt, all of these things, whether they be the wars or rumors of war, not in particular in Israel. Israel's war is another war among all the wars and rumors of wars that Jesus warns us about. They are the labor pains, he says. They're not the birth. They're the labor pains. And if anyone has, I haven't personally, but if anyone has been in labor, sometimes labor is short and sometimes it is very long. But Jesus says this is like a woman in travail, in the travail of childbirth. These are merely the labor pains, the pangs that come before the labor begins. And they are signs not of when the baby is coming, but most certainly that the baby is coming. Now, why would I, both the two previous callers had mentioned a literal thousand-year reign of Christ, and why do I believe that's not scripturally warranted? A right reading of these passages, especially in Revelation 21. Very simple answer to that one. When does Jesus begin to reign in his fullness as Messiah and Savior of the world? At his resurrection and his ascension. And then that leaves the only thing on the prophetic calendar is what he said was on the prophetic calendar, his imminent return. We'll be right back.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Christians think of themselves as students of the Scripture, God's Word. Read through the Bible, Old Testament or New Testament. It's full of the names of cities, rivers, mountains, plains. Where were these places? How does a better understanding of the geography of the Holy Land aid Christians as students of Scripture? Our Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for July, is an easy-to-read reference on the geography of Israel. It's called The Land of Milk and Honey. For more information about this book, call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours. Their number, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, or visit our website and find Our Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for July, The Land of Milk and Honey, An Introduction to the Geography of Israel. That's issuesetc.org.
The Bible, it was taken off a billboard.
Answers with Ken Ham, a popular author and speaker on the Book of Genesis. Ken, has our Western culture become so secularized that it won't even allow Bible verses on billboards anymore?
Well, Mark, certain Bible verses once caused a problem near New York City. A certain pastor paid for a Bible verse from Leviticus to be placed on a number of billboards on Staten Island. but the billboards were taken down because a judge said they were offensive, and they also broke the county's laws concerning prejudice, intolerance, and other so-called bias-related attitudes. So what did the Bible verse say? Well, it was from Leviticus 18, verse 22. Do not lie with a man as one lies with a woman. That is detestable. Because this verse so clearly condemns homosexual behavior, it was considered a violation of some code. Regardless of whether you believe that billboards really should be used to confront homosexual behavior, it does show how far American culture has fallen and lost its biblical foundation. We're now seeing the consequences of generations of students who've been taken through an education system and been indoctrinated in evolutionary humanism. The culture increasingly believes that morality is relative, and Christians have no right to impose their Christian morality on them. How long will it be before it's illegal to quote other passages of the Bible?
Are you aware that the book of Genesis can be a powerful tool for evangelism? That's one of the themes of Ken Ham's new booklet on effective evangelism. It's available free on our website, answersradio.com.
Well, I'm glad Jesus didn't feel that way about you.
Pastor Matt Harrison, Executive Director of LCMS World Relief, responding to the idea that the AIDS crisis is self-inflicted and Christians need not respond in love.
Look, you reap what you sow. You're a sinner. You're damned to hell. Go rot. That's not Jesus. And the Bible doesn't tell us, Jesus says, you made your bed, now lie in it. I'm not going to help. So that's an impossible response for a Christian. Even though we know that actions have consequences, but consequences, those consequences don't kill mercy and don't kill a proclamation of the law in order to bring the gospel.
Find LCMS World Relief at our homepage, issuesetc.org, Christ-centered, cross-focused, love for the neighbor.
In the aftermath of fierce storms that knocked out power to KFUO, we've been broadcasting on backup systems made possible through donations by listeners like you. We appreciate forward-thinking folks who help us stay prepared for emergency situations like what we've experienced. Your support right now will take a little pressure off our reserves. Contact Jeff Craigmeyer or send a check to make a donation today to AME 50 KFUO.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. Here in the last 25 minutes, a little bit more audio open lines for the next few minutes, and then we'll be talking about this piece in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Churches Joining Stem Cell Showdown. I noticed Maggie Carner was quoted in that piece in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch from LCMS World Relief and LCMS Life Ministries. LCMS World Relief is doing all sorts of things all over the world. Also, defending life from beginning to end through LCMS Life Ministries. You can find out that's just among the many things that they're doing nationally, locally, and internationally. To find out a little bit more about LCMS World Relief or to earmark a donation, you can go to our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org, and find LCMS World Relief there, or you can earmark a donation to any of their many efforts around the world. 1-888-930-4438. 1-888-930-4438. It's more audio open lines for the next few minutes before we're joined by Dr. Richard Cole of Washington University. Here's the next piece. This is very interesting. It's called Behind the Veil, and it has to do with women living under Islam.
I wish I could show you these women's faces. They are beautiful, vibrant, and behind closed doors, full of life. Out in the streets of Baghdad, their appearance could be a death sentence.
I can't wear what I want. You know, it's very dangerous to walk in the street like this.
Religious extremist groups have forcibly imposed their conservative restrictions on all women's lives. Women are even threatened if seen driving a car or venturing out to the market alone. A very different situation than under Saddam Hussein.
What are you able to do in your capacity as state advisor for women's affairs to try to fight back?
First step, I begin by my own self. I'm driving my own car by my own self.
But other than Dr. Smaysam's own acts of defiance, no one will listen.
Nothing, even from the minister until the prime minister.
She says she'll continue to fight, clinging to the belief that life, at least for her children, will be better. But for others, the fight is over.
I will say goodbye to democracy, to the freedom of Iraq. I have to save myself and my family.
Arwa Damon, CNN, Baghdad.
It's a sad story. You know, women who have tasted a bit of Western-style democracy, if you can even call that, in places like Iraq, and then of the freedom that comes along with it, but because Islam and Sharia law still prevail on the streets, what does she end up by saying? She says, I say goodbye to democracy, because she fears for her life and the lives of the other women in her family. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Sharon in Creve Coeur is on the line. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. Can I speak now?
Sure you can.
Here's my question. I listen to Evan Baxter almost every day, and he says that if we send him money anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000, that he will send out the End Time magazine, which is distributed because he believes that we can stop the revelation prophecies from happening. He believes that President Bush, or stated that President Bush, has signed the National ID Act, and it will come into effect as early as 2007. In fact, we won't be able to buy or sell anything without this card. He says it's not a mark, it's a card. If the prophecy is happening, can he stop it? Will these magazines stop it? Would he want to stop it? And why is he saying that he can? And the second statement I want to make is that somebody said that Mel Gibson's career is over. Mel Gibson's career is not over because he drunk and made those comments. Mel Gibson is of the world, and the world loves his own. They will welcome him. Hollywood will console him in his time of trouble. And that's just my question and my comment.
All right, Sharon, thank you very much. Okay, a couple things. She mentions Irving Baxter. Sharon, don't send him anything. Not $5,000 or $10,000. Please don't. He claims that he can stop the end times prophecies from happening. That's a new one. Whatever happened to the prophetic timetable? This is an odd feature of the dispensational or the millennial end times view that is so popular nowadays and popularized by things like the Left Behind series. It has subtly introduced a human element into the unfolding of biblical prophecy. Let me just see if I can make this as clear. And I think Irving Baxter is an extreme case, saying that he can stop it, or he can change the course of biblical prophecy, or delay it, or something like that. The odd thing about this is, if you look at the other dispensational views, they kind of have a similar view. It's like, well, if we do the right thing, this could be Armageddon, but if Condoleezza Rice does the right thing over there and we get a ceasefire, maybe not. As though the fulfillment of biblical prophecy is as yet unwritten. I've always wondered if it is the end, and it could be, but if it is the end, why would you want to stop it? Why would you want to delay it one day or hour? I certainly wouldn't. Christ's glorious appearing is something to which Christians ought to anxiously look forward to. For the last few minutes of the program, Dr. Richard Cole joins us. Yesterday in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, you might have read the story, churches joining stem cell showdown. A number of people on both sides of the debate, and people kind of in the middle of the debate, quoted in that story. Dr. Richard Cole is a regular guest. He's professor and chairman of the Department of Otolaryngology at Washington University and a board member for Missourians Against Human Cloning. Dr. Cole, welcome back.
Thank you.
I want you to react to something that Jack Danforth is quoted as saying in this story in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. He says this is how the embryonic stem cell debate in Missouri really should be considered. He says if a building was burning and there was a Petri dish in one room and a three-year-old in the other, which would you save? There is no moral equivalence between the cells in a dish never implanted in a uterus and a child. Your response?
Well, this is a rather far-fetched analogy. The fact that there are young, developing human beings in a Petri dish and a well-developed child in the other room shouldn't really come into discussion as far as which one is more valuable. I think anyone who is faced with a crisis of saving one person or another person in a burning building is going to have to make some decisions, and one might choose one over the other. The real question is whether we should be creating those embryos for the purpose of destruction. And comparing that to a crisis situation is not a good analogy. In the proposed legislation, there would be an open door for scientists to create human embryos, human beings at the embryonic stage, for the sole purpose of experimenting with them. And that's the ethical decision now. It's not a question of whether that that human embryo is more valuable than another human embryo or more valuable than another person. It's a question of whether we should be making and destroying human life.
Danforth also says in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch piece that he'd prefer to keep religion out of what he sees as a scientific matter. Dr. Cole, are religious arguments the only arguments to be made against embryonic stem cell research?
Not at all. We scientists have known for decades that life of an animal or a human being begins at that early fertilization of the egg stage, where the complete set of genes is formed in a single cell called the zygote, and that goes on to develop into a unique person in the case of a human. And each of us was a unique zygote at one time, a unique embryo, albeit very, very tiny. And scientific textbooks, any scientific textbook on development that you pick up will tell you that that is the beginning of a human life. So it's really not a religious argument as to when life begins. It's really quite well worked out scientifically. I think the real debate is, what is the value of that life? Is the value of an embryo less than the value of a fetus or than a baby or than an adolescent or an adult?
Well, here's some place where you may agree with former Senator Danforth. He says that Missouri, especially with regard to this embryonic stem cell initiative, is a bellwether state. Our state is a microcosm of the country, he says. Agree or disagree?
I absolutely agree with that. I think this is an issue that has garnered the attention of the entire nation. There are decision makers at all levels of our culture that are watching Missouri. The way Missouri goes is the way the rest of the country will go with this issue. I think this is not just a local issue in Missouri, but rather it's a national issue. And he is very, very right that however this goes, I think that other states will go the same way and probably the entire nation.
So it's true that both advocates of embryonic stem cell research and opponents are watching closely what's happening here.
That's correct.
Is the fact that Missouri is, in many other respects, a pro-life state, does it not only make it a bellwether, but also kind of let's try the hardest case first, and if we can do that, then if we can make it here, we can make it anywhere?
That may be part of the thinking. I think that the individuals who support this amendment were able to get an amendment on our ballot that is really quite deceptive as far as its wording and a means to really deceive the people of the state of Missouri. The fact that they state that it bans human cloning and it really opens the door for all of human cloning but requires the destruction and the killing of the human embryo is a very deceptive feature of this amendment. So people on casual reading will think, well, this is good because it's banning human cloning, but it actually is legalizing it and ensconcing this legalization of cloning and killing of human embryos in our state constitution.
Does it help the debate, in your opinion, or does it hinder the debate, in your opinion, when it comes to this initiative, that on both sides, religious groups, denominations, individual churches, or religious leaders have lined up and are beginning to speak publicly?
Well, I, being a person of faith and a scientist, I think that both arguments are needed and are appropriate. I think if the Christian church fails to wake up on this issue, shame on us. I think that we have not done our duty. We have not paid attention to what's happening in our culture. On the other hand, more and more scientists are coming forth who see the horror of opening the door on destroying human beings for the purpose of scientific research and are coming alongside us as well. So I think that it's really the responsibility of the religious community, the Christian community, to oppose this amendment. And I think it's the responsibility of those who are not Christians to educate themselves and realize really what they're voting for.
Many are concerned, and there's one who's quoted in the story in the paper, that either side of the debate tends to simplify their messages for the masses. Obviously, when you're trying to communicate a complicated message, you need to simplify to some degree. But how do the opponents of human cloning for biomedical research state in a simple way their opposition to this Missouri initiative without oversimplifying it?
You're talking about the proponents of the amendment?
No, the opponents.
The opponent.
Yes.
Okay. Those of us who oppose the amendment say simply that what is being allowed and encouraged is the cloning of human beings at the embryonic stage. That's a very simple concept. That's exactly the same process that was used to clone Dolly the sheep, and that's what's being proposed in this amendment. Our opponents skirt that issue and do not use the word embryo or cloning and try to use other words to confuse the public. So I think the issue is very, very simple, and that is the amendment proposes to clone human beings at the embryonic stage and then destroy those human beings before they're 14 days of age.
Now, what do you, I got so many other questions, but what do you make of the way the actual science is being reported by the press? I'm going to read an example from the story in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch that sounds scientifically, at least in its terminology, fishy to me. I approach this as a layperson. But tell me if I'm noting an inaccuracy, unwitting or not. It talks about embryonic stem cell research, and then it describes SCNT, somatic cell nuclear transfer. It says under SCNT, the nucleus of an unfertilized embryo is removed and replaced with the nucleus of another cell. The term there, embryo, seems to be an inaccuracy. It's not yet an embryo. Anything that's fertilized is automatically an embryo. This must be an egg they're talking about.
That's correct. I think that's incorrect. It's SCNT is the process of cloning, and it's the process in which the nucleus is removed from an egg and the nucleus from another cell is put into the egg, creating a cloned embryo. And if it were done in humans, it would be a cloned human embryo.
What do you make of the fact that twice in this story in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, the debate over embryonic stem cell research in Missouri is referred to as a holy war?
I think that mischaracterizes it. I think that there are several key issues in this amendment. The most important one, in my view, my own conviction, is that the question of whether we should be creating human beings at the embryonic stage for the purposes of scientific research and destruction. That's the key point, and I think that if the people in Missouri understood that this was the decision that they were making, saying, is it right to destroy these human embryos, to create and destroy these human embryos, or is it wrong? That's the key decision. The other issues that are involved with this amendment are the fact that it requires human eggs, and it requires that women donate human eggs at risk to their own health. And the third, of course, is that the amendment provides that there should be no restrictions on funding this type of research through state funds, and it opens the door for people, for institutes, for really anyone to request and demand funding from the state to support this type of research. So what will happen is that inevitably state funds will go to support this research.
We're talking with Dr. Richard Cole, professor and chairman of the Department of Otolaryngology at Washington University. He's a board member for Missourians Against Human Cloning. about the story in the paper yesterday titled Churches Joining Stem Cell Showdown. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. And our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Andy's on the line calling from Kirkwood. Hi, Andy. Andy, welcome. All right, we'll get Andy back if we can. Has public religious opposition for the Missouri Coalition for Life-Saving Cures Initiative, has it come too late?
No, I don't believe so. I should digress one moment and just make a disclaimer that I am representing myself. I am not representing Washington University or its views. I had to make that clear.
Sure.
Has it come too late? I don't think so. Really, this our opposition is a grassroots opposition. We are concerned citizens all over the state who are expressing our concern about an amendment that will be voted upon several months from now. Our opposition is funded largely by Jim and Virginia Stowers of the Stowers Institute in Kansas City. They've put about $15 million into a widespread advertising and campaigning about this. And, of course, we don't have those kind of funds. We're getting the word out. We're getting the word out in our friend-to-friend method. We're getting it out to community groups, church groups, and so forth. So the message is getting out, and I think I'm encountering more and more people who are understanding the issue better.
505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Jay is on the line calling from his car. Hi, Jay.
Hello, Pastor Todd. How are you?
Very well.
My question is, and I hope I can ask this the right way, the proponents of the measure are maintaining somehow or another that the embryos are not fertilized. And we don't see it that way at all. How are they able to justify that statement, which to us just seems like a lie?
Thank you very much. And it's a very good question, in fact, because it goes to the misinformation that's often put out by the other side. How would you respond, Dr. Cole?
Well, until a decade or so ago, the only way that an embryo was ever created was the union of a sperm and an egg in the process of fertilization. That all changed in the last decade, and especially with Dolly the sheep, when a sheep embryo was created not by that fertilization process, but by bypassing the process and using an egg which had its nucleus removed and then using a nucleus from another cell to put in the egg. That's the process of cloning, or SCNT. So there's two ways to make a sheep. One is the natural way with the egg and the sperm, and the other is the cloning method. So both methods, it's important to know that both methods result in an embryo, and they result in an embryo that will continue developing in many cases, to the fully developed animal. So it's not, the cloning process is technically not a product of direct fertilization, although I might say that the donor cell at one time was actually the product of fertilization, so it was borrowed from another fertilized organism.
So just because the human embryo, in this case, is not the product of egg and sperm, it is nonetheless a human embryo via different means.
If that were ever done, and of course it has never been done successfully, and as surely as Dolly was a sheep, an embryo of this type would be a human embryo.
Sherry calls from her car. Hi, Sherry.
Hi there. I did receive some literature, and I'm almost home, so I'm going to check out the name of the organization that sent it. But, yeah, everything I read, basically the questionnaire said, you know, would you vote for this? But everything that I read said stem cell research only, nothing about embryonic or adult, no separation. I found that interesting. And then maybe another day, another show, should the worst happen, and we do have to support the research with state funding, you know, what do Christians do then? Because, you know, it's like you're being forced to sin. I don't know. Another day, another show.
All right, Sherry, thank you very much. A good first question there, and the second one we can take up a little bit later at some other time. The first question having to do with the fact that the term embryo is often conspicuously absent from the proponents' literature here. They're now talking about early stem cells rather than embryonic stem cells.
Yes. The fact that these are embryos is a point that they would not like to discuss. So they have removed the word from the word embryo from all of their discussions, although in fact the actual scientific truth is these are cloned embryos that we're talking about. So they took out the word embryo and now propose to use the word early stem cells instead of embryonic stem cells. They also do not use the word cloning, but rather use the word SCNT. SCNT, somatic cell nuclear transfer, is a bunch of scientific language that means cloning, but that tries to confuse the public. So I believe that this coalition is trying to confuse the people in the state of Missouri by not using these correct scientific terms. As a matter of fact, two of their proponents, Dr. Neves and Dr. Danforth, Bill Danforth, have actually written an editorial to the magazine Science, proposing that that scientists stop using the terms embryo and cloning and rather use the other terms that they're suggesting.
That's telling. Dr. Richard Cole is professor and chairman of the Department of Otolaryngology at Washington University. He is board member for Missourians Against Human Cloning. Their website, nocloning.org, nocloning.org. Dr. Cole, thanks for being our guest.
You're very welcome.
Tune in tonight at 8 for the rebroadcast of today's first hour of Issues Etc. We discuss the market-driven church with Father Clark, and then tomorrow on the program, we're going to discuss, well, some self-proclaimed priestesses in the Roman Catholic Church, an ordination that was not condoned or sanctioned in any way, and yet they say that they are ordained. We'll talk about that with Dr. James Hitchcock of St. Louis University, and we'll discuss the rapture, picking up on a little bit of our end times conversation. Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will be our guest tomorrow on Issues Etc. Until then, tune in for that live rebroadcast. Very interesting first hour on the Market Driven Church. It's tonight at 8 on AM 850 KFUO. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM 850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.